The Sports Talk live from Saints headquarters. Minicamp day two in the books. They'll wrap it up tomorrow, a three-day minicamp out here on Airline Drive. Marcus Davenport did not practice today. The Saints rookie defensive end did not practice. He left practice a little early with some trainers yesterday. You have to believe it's the minor thumb injury that he will require surgery on after minicamp concludes, and he will be ready for training camp. Bobby, we spent last hour, the back end of last hour, talking about the kickoff rule changes, and I asked Deuce right before the top of the hour, before he got out of here, special teams are always a factor, but I think with the kicking rule changes, I think they're going to become more and more of a factor this year and going forward. A lot more games might be decided by a special teams play than we're typically used to.
Yeah, and we have to get better in that area. You know, you're always trying to win all phases. You hear that all the time by coaches, whether it's offense, defense, or special teams. Can we win in all phases? And we didn't do that last year. If you look at it, Chris, you're looking at the regular season and the postseason, for instance. Now, this is Pro Bowl numbers. This might be like all pro. Not quite. It wasn't. They even had someone better. Now, Alvin Kamara only had 11 kickoff returns, but he averaged 31.5 yards. And considering the rule changes, no, that was a Pro Bowl numbers. Not necessarily, like I said, all pro. Now, as a team, we only averaged 23 yards a kick return, and we were giving up basically a 25. You want to be for sure 25 or above. So that's when you look at Alvin Kamara, 31.5. That's about as good as it gets. You look at Lewis, who had 13 kickoff returns. He averaged 23.5. So really, Alvin Kamara was the one back there. Now, you look at punt return. That's where, to me, we got to get better. And you look at Ted Ginn, even though he's returned punts for a touchdown in NFL, he only averaged 5.4. You look at Lewis, was 8.2. But as a team, Christian, we only averaged 6.5 yards a punt return. And opponents were getting 10.5. So you don't think that makes a difference. You want to get double digits. If you want to average for sure 10 or more, preferably if you, like, Pro Bowl again, the numbers, you want to be about 14. And then you look in the playoffs, Christian, and it was the same thing. We ended up playing two playoff games. We averaged 6 yards a punt return, and we gave up 10. Now, kickoff was dead even. We're at 25, so we're a lot better. But that's an area we got to get better, I think. Punt coverage, kickoff coverage, but also punt and kick return. And specifically, because that's, you know, when you look at hidden yardage and you're flipping the field, one less first down you have to get have a scoring opportunity. That's where I know Sean Payton, they paying attention to that. We still need to get better on punt coverage and punt return, and that competition is going to be wide open in training camp.
Got a text here at 878-70-3904. How is the Florida State pick, meaning Rick Leonard, fourth round draft pick this past season? First off, tomorrow we're going to give you an in-depth look at all of the draft picks after 3 days of minicamp and three OTAs headed into training camp. That'll be a focal point on tomorrow's show, the rookie draft class as a whole, and their three practices and OTAs that we saw and three minicamp practices. As far as Rick Leonard, Bobby, we've said this before, and we'll just be repetitive, and it's okay because I think people may have missed it or what have you. It's hard to gauge the progress of anybody on the interior offensive and defensive lines. It just is fighting. There's no pads. There's no leverage. There's no bull rushes.
What you going to – and that's always a homework assignment. I gave sometimes to you, but or even Steve Gell. You know, Gell, go look at the one-on-one, or sometimes I'd even
one-on-one
go look at
pass rush.
Instead of looking at the skill positions all the time, looking at one-on-one when they got the pads on pass rush. And now it's a good measuring stick, and then you can look at team periods, how they're doing. But then also, you know, when they do that 12-play inside run, the defense knows they're running. They don't have, you know, the run support with the defensive backs to fill the hole. But you can see the steps, the combo blocks that they have. So that's when you truly can judge an offensive or defensive lineman, is when they're in training camp and not what you're seeing in the OTAs and mini camp. So, yeah, so to say, I mean, is he you can't say bus, but to say.
You can't say anything.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, you really can't.
I couldn't, but you can't say anything about him.
It literally, it would be.
It wouldn't be
to
fair.
To describe it for anybody that hasn't seen it, just picture maybe middle school kids pushing each other, just shoving each other.
Right.
That's all they're doing. I mean, literally, that's all they're doing. I asked Tyler Davison a couple things. We're going to have him. I interviewed him earlier. And I said, okay, so as a defensive lineman, what are you working on? He'll explain that a little bit better than me. But he basically said footwork, steps, hand placement. So that goes to show you, not necessarily they're getting leverage, but where can I place my hands to get the leverage that I would want based on a rushing technique that I'm implementing? And look, it's just really difficult. And we're not choosing the easy way out. They literally are like two middle school kids, oversized middle school kids pushing each other back and forth. And that's all it really amounts to. You can look at a little bit of hand placement, et cetera, and you might not notice the subtle differences. They will, because they're trying to maneuver a player. It might put their hand on the left, their right hand on the left shoulder for a particular leverage spot. But other than that, you can't tell about strength or power.
Now, the only thing you can see, and you don't want to happen, because then you could whiff, and it could help maybe somewhat with the pads, but you could take a false step and get beat on a pass rush. Mm-hmm. So in other words, if you see some guy, well, he got in there way too quick. Yeah. I don't care if you have pads or no pads. So when you look like yesterday, Davenport had a sack. Christian, you look at George Johnson. He had a sack. But that's like, no, I don't care if they had pads or no pads. Unless the quarterback can get away, that was a sack. And, you know, you just want to, you know, like, for instance, that Taylor Stallworth on Taysom Hill. I think he got on Taysom Hill so quick, I couldn't see who was blocking him. But, I mean, he has great mobility. But he probably would have got sacked on that play. So you always see different situations where that, you know what, whether it was pads or not, the quarterback would have had no chance. And so that's what, you know, when they watch a film, the offensive line has to avoid. Like, you can say, well, it can be more aggressive with pads. But, no, a lot of it, even when you have the pads, it's still your footwork and hand placement if you're going to stop an opponent.
So, Texter, 3904, send that to us about a week into camp, week and a half into training camp. Because remember now, the first 3 days of training camp are non-padded practice CBA. So, basically, the first 3 days of training camp are what we're seeing now currently in minicamp. So, give us a week and a half or so in the camp. We'll be able to talk about all these offensive linemen, the starters, the backups, Will Clapp, Rick Leonard, Cameron Tom, all these guys. We'll be able to evaluate those guys a little bit more clearly.
And Christian, you look at OTAs and mini camps like this across the league. They're just part of the collective bargaining agreement. It's really a skills camp.
It is.
Kind of like what you see in high school now when they go on tour.
7-on-7.
Yeah. And they
go
on tour. That, yeah, because really you cannot judge the linemen.
And I think you said it best the other day before we got into minicamp. Ultimately, as a fan, you encourage them to not watch the football if you really want to see plays. But this is a time where you do.
Yes,
to watch
yeah. Like a lot of times, as a fan, you're watching a real game, so you just watch the ball, and that's just human nature. And you don't see who's truly winning in the trenches. And a lot of times, you know, you take our offensive line for granted because they're not getting beat. I gave the example of a deep snapper. You don't even know who the deep snapper is. You never talk about him unless, man, who in the hell snapped to have a bad snap? Mm-hmm. And then you remember his name. Well, right now, if you look at it. How can you tell if the offensive defense line who's having a bad practice or not? That's when you got to look in the trenches. And when does the offensive lineman get called out? You remember? I remember talking penalties, or we're talking with Zach Streep. We played the Chiefs in Houston. All of a sudden, he's giving up three sacks on that guy. And then look at all the other games where he might have dominated and did a great job. So it's just when all of a sudden it's magnified. When you influence the play, and usually on the line, it's kind of a negative thing. Now, if you do the replay, look at that hole.
Right.
You could drive a Mack truck through it. Then you can break down the offensive line, who's getting the job done. But, yeah, right now, if you come here tomorrow to last practice that you get to watch before training camp, they're off for 7 weeks, really just follow the ball. You look at the one-on-one, just look at the secondary, look at the receivers. And obviously the accuracy of the quarterbacks, that all comes into play.
Bobby Hebert, Christian Garrick, live from Saints camp here. Day two of minicamp history in the books. Day three tomorrow. But up next, you'll hear from Saints head coach Sean Payton right here on Saints Radio, WWL. Welcome back to Sports Talk. Bobby Hebert, Christian Garrick here. Phone lines are open at 504-260-1870. Bobby's pointing at me feverishly. He wants to get to.
Well, no, because we were, talking about the kickoff return and what could come about. You look at the 2010 2010 season was the last time before the league moved the kickoffs from the 30 to the 35. Then in 2016, the league put the ball at the 25 after touchbacks instead of the 20. So you kind of look at how they're trying to tweak the kickoff, and I want them to never get rid of the kickoff.
No.
To me, it's a part of football. How can you make it safe? Now, you look at last season, the Chiefs led the NFL in kick returns with 47, a total that in 2010 would have ranked second to last among the 32 teams. Now, the Saints last season returned 36 kickoffs and had 32 kickoff returns against them. Far fewer than the 52 returns and 66 returns in 2010. So it does matter where you kick off the ball, the point being. Now, under the new rules, teams are less likely, because this could affect your roster, your final roster, less likely to have bigger-bodied players on the field as far as kickoff return, kickoff coverage. It's going to change a little bit of the body types. This is what Coach Payne said. It's going to change a little bit of the body types of who might be on the return team, with eight guys deployed in the first 15 yards. So bottom line is you can't be kamikaze. You won't have those running starts where it's like just a collision. You know, when you're trying to blow up the wedge and all that, that's what the NFL is trying to eliminate. And I think that's what you might even see college and high school eventually. So if you look at the return team, eight guys are going to be deployed in the first 15 yards. So you basically can get a running start. Now, Coach Payton said, I think you're going to see martyr kicks. That's what we're talking about. Those pooch kicks, yes. To open spots on the field. It'll be interesting to see, especially early in the year, how everyone plays that. Now, Christian, who knows what's going to happen? Now, the new rules call for the kicking team to evenly distribute also five players on each side. You can't stack it. So they're going to have five players on each side of the kicker, with the return team required, like I said, to keep eight players within 15 yards at a spot of the kick. No longer will a team be allowed to overload one side of the field in an effort to create a blocking or coverage advantage, nor will teams be allowed to apply wedge blocking formations. Remember, they said, okay, let's make the wedge smaller, mm-hmm. but it still wasn't enough. We used to have a five-man wedge.
Now three.
Yes, and you know how they're trying to decrease it. Now that are responsible when they broke down the film for some of the more serious injuries that you had on kickoff. So that's what they're trying to avoid. So one intent of the rule, like I said, is to reduce the number of concussions and other severe injuries that incurred on kickoff. So players will not have, like I said, as much of a running start before the players on the blocking and coverage teams and they collide. And you have those kind of collisions.
This is going to lead to bigger returns, I think.
Yes, without a doubt. So, listen, we don't want to get Alvin Kamara hurt, but I think this is the kind of area you get Alvin Kamara in space that he would excel. So, if I look at last year's rookie year, Christian, 31.5 average, I'm telling you, that's a Pro Bowl returner. Now, he only had 11 kick returns. Who knows? He might have 25. You might double that. He might have 22 to 25, and you're not really risking him because you're catching the ball and you're in space. And don't you want to get Alvin Kamara in space?
Yeah, and they don't have that running start. That running start is so key to
Yes,
it.
Yeah. And so that's why I think I'm a fan of not eliminating the kickoff. I'm a traditionalist. I think kickoff return should be in it. And I like the rule how they tweaked it. And I think it's going to benefit the returns. The fans like kickoff returns. You've actually seen kickoff returns for a touchdown in a Super Bowl.
Mm-hmm.
Most
right
recently in a Super Bowl. The guy from
Jacoby Jones.
Jacoby Jones from Abramson, from New Orleans. I'm trying to think of Jennings. They had a Jennings
saw in 2000,
with the Bengals.
You saw in 2006, or the 7th Super Bowl, Devin Hester.
Devin Hester, and then even going back, Jennings with the Bengals. It'll be interesting to see. Mark, look this up back in the studio. How many kickoff returns for a touchdown have there been in the Super Bowl? And I think that's for sure. I could count three right now.
I think three.
And that's a significant play that I think the fans enjoy.
Maybe Hester. I think Hester. I thought Hester was the first one.
I'm telling you, no. Jennings with the Bengals, I think when the 49ers beat him in the Silverdome. Christian, I'm not the concussions aren't affecting me yet. Maybe that's kind of long-term memory, though. But look that up, Mark. I think it was a Jennings from Furman. I don't know why I'm thinking Furman University. and ran back a kick return all the way for the Bengals. And I think it might have been that Super Bowl against the 49ers in the Silverdome.
I think you're going to see a lot more games decided by the special teams play this year than we've seen over the last decade. I'm interested to see how this plays out. Do you carry less offensive linemen, less defensive linemen now? What does this do to your overall makeup?
I'd say more. You very seldom, you could see defensive linemen in a kick return. I'd say more the offensive linemen. Because you'd have a big guy you want on the wedge to try and, you know, so they didn't get blown up as a little guy. So I think it would maybe affect the depth on your O-line. And what I mean by effect, it could be one less O-lineman. Mm-hmm. But, it, you know, depends who's healthy, who's playing. That's one luxury the Saints have. Talking with Steve Court today, who was out there at practice working with the O-line coach, Peyton, have had him out there, you know, a former Saints alum. And Steve's saying, right now, you only have five starters, but it's for sure maybe seven or eight deep. And that's a good problem to have.
Especially with the injuries that the offensive line had last year.
Right.
I mean, they are, and that's hard to believe when you consider you lost Senio Calamete this offseason, but it shows you the growth and the development of Cameron
I don't think
Tom
they're gonna
and
miss,
also the addition of Jermon Bushrod.
That's a Bushrod. I don't think they're going to miss. Listen, I love Calamete. I'm glad he had a great opportunity to go to the Texans, get paid and all that, but I don't think they're going to miss a beat with Bushrod coming on board.
Bobby Hebert, Christian Garrick, phone lines are open at 504-260-1870. Text 870-870. Coming to you live from Saints camp here as we watch day two of Saints minicamp go in the books. Plenty online for you at WWL.com. Talking about Kurt Coleman as well. Steve Geller had a nice piece on that. Also, I'll give you my practice observations. All you have to do is go to WWL.com. And, of course, our resident pros, Bobby Hebert and Deuce McAllister, weigh in.
How can you be so Dwight and so Duong?
Welcome back to Sports Talk. We were thinking there was three Super Bowl kickoffs returned for a touchdown. Mark Menard at Master Control being the Johnny on the spot doing the research. There's been 10 in NFL history in the Super Bowl, 10 kickoff returns for a touchdown. And the reason why I can't believe I forgot about we forgot about Desmond Howard, but the reason why I said Devin Hester as being the first, I had it confused. He was the first to return the opening kickoff of a Super Bowl for a touchdown against the Colts.
Well, and you look in the last two decades, basically, you've had two in the Superdome. Desmond Howard with the Packers against the Patriots and Jacoby Jones with the Ravens against the 49ers.
And you were spot on remembering that 49ers-Bengals return. Stanford Jennings.
Yep, against the 49ers. And
you can't remember last week, but you can remember that stuff, huh?
No, it was in the Silverdome, and I think I crossed paths with that individual doing something with them, right. if I can recall. But that's why I still think, though, the kickoff needs to be in football. Tweak it. Do whatever you have to do to make it safe. It's still a contact sport, but that's an explosive play. I mean, when you hoop it in Holland last year when Alvin Kamara takes it 106 yards against Tampa Bay. Now, you don't
it's
want
the
it,
most exciting play, I think, in football.
Now, you don't want it to go against you.
No.
You go like, damn, how can that happen?
Right.
And
I go, right. You know,
But I think it needs to be part of football.
Sean Payton sat down with the media today following practice. Here he is talking about DeMario Davis, the new acquisition at linebacker from the New York Jets. What have you seen, Bobby, from DeMario Davis?
Well, he can run sideline to sideline, and I think because he's done it on the NFL level and had success, you know, we kind of viewed him initially and maybe in the middle, but I think wherever they plug and play him, that he'll have success. Now, depending on what type of team you were playing, and let's say they run first, I think you'd go with DeMario Davis over A.J. Klein in the middle. Deuce and I was talking about this. Simply, if you play in a team like the Redskins. Yeah. They're going
to
run on first down. And, you know, different teams have different personalities. DeMario Davis, he's just stouter. Is that a word, Kristen?
Yeah. More stout.
Yeah. He just, if you look at, like, A.J. Klein, a more lean built, where DeMario Davis, now you might say 10, 15 pounds makes all the difference, but he just looks more like, well, that's a middle linebacker. Then you also implementing, given the opportunity, took advantage, Manti Te'o against the run, playing in the middle. Now you would, you know, the more they could do, the more diversified. Coach Nolan talked about that. How many different linebacking positions can you play? You know, the Sam, the Will, the Mike, that being strong, weak, or in the middle. Well, you know, Manti Te'o is a middle linebacker. You're not putting Manti Te'o in pass coverage or putting him on the weak side. He's a middle linebacker. And really, looking just on the surface, that potentially we have three middle linebackers. But A.J. Klein and you look at DeMario Davis, they could play outside. They could play inside. Mm-hmm. But they also could play outside, where I think Manti Te'o is more in the middle. You look, Alex Azzalone. I like our depth. Look, all Craig Robinson has done is take advantage of his opportunity when called upon. A player that made a play today, and Deuce said it'd be interesting to see what he does in training camp. He was with the Packers, a four-year guy at Toledo, Jayron Elliott. I mean, he looks the part, 6'3", 255. So there's a lot of competition. Nate Stupar came out with a big interception. So probably I would say right now where we're at with the linebacking core, I like it as much as far as the depth and the competition as much that I've seen in a while on the Sean Payton.
Well, so does Sean Payton, because that's the next clip you're going to hear. Is it the deepest he's been on defense since he's been here? They do. I mean, you look at the versatility, that's what you really like. But the depth, because you know there's going to be injuries. They were once very thin at that position. Remember when Craig Robertson first came here? He was thought to be a special teams guy. Ended up playing a lot that year, his first year. Last year, because of injury, he played a lot with Alex Anzalone going down. But they didn't have a whole lot of options, a whole lot of things, different things. That was when Stephon Anthony was still trying to find his way as the Mike linebacker. The depth now at linebacker for the Saints compared to 3 years ago and 2 years ago is off the charts.
Well, and then you have a couple of guys that I don't know how you're going to call their name. You know, right place, right time to make a team. I was like, God, they could maybe play in the NFL, not make this team or give an opportunity. I'm looking at a couple of guys like Keshawn Freeman, a rookie out of Georgia Tech, Colton Jumper, a rookie out of Tennessee. But look how hard it'd be for them to make the team.
3 years ago, they'd have had a great chance.
Yeah, but right now, what I'm saying, Christian, you know what they have to do? They better kick butt on special teams. And when they get that chance in preseason, they're going down and kick off a punt coverage and making mm-hmm. a tackle. Or are they a tackling machine? You know, look in the past where you truly had free agents that weren't drafted and made it. Look at Jolon Dunbar, Boston College.
Jonathan Casillas.
Deuce and I was talking about this. Jonathan Casillas out of Wisconsin, he's now a team captain for the Giants.
I know.
So, it's all timing when you go on and try to make what team. And nothing against these guys, but they're going to be hard-pressed to make this team because of the depth and the experience at linebacker.
Look at this offseason. Who they released? Two players this year, or this offseason, that were on the roster or practice squad last year, Adam Big Hill and Michael Maudie. Both of those guys are no longer on this roster. That shows you how much depth they have currently at linebacker. We'll step away and come back. We're going to get more from Saints head coach Sean Payton next here on WWLAMFM.com. All right, more from Saints head coach Sean Payton. How can Alvin Kamara get better in his second season? Year two for Kamara. Last year he talked about, you're going to hear from Alvin Kamara next hour.
I'm going to tell you last year, can he repeat that? I don't know.
No, I'm talking about some of the things he said. I'm recapping a little bit of it. You'll hear more of it in detail. But he said last year it was one of those days where he knew the playbook, but it was also that natural second guess. Is it? Yeah, I think I got it. Yep, I got it. You know what I mean? Now to where now it's more it's second nature.
Well, and Sean Payton said he's a very smart football player, how he's picked up things from the get-go. But Christian, that he accomplished something last year, what a Hall of Famer accomplished. And what I'm talking about is Gale Sears. Gale Sears, blew out his knee. I want to say he only played, I think, 7 years with the Chicago Bears. But it's a Hall of Famer. Looking at it, Alvin Kamara topped 1,500 yards from scrimmage. And that's why I'm bringing this up. And he joined Hall of Fame rusher Gale Sears as the only rookies to score 5 rushing touchdowns, 5 receiving touchdowns, and a special teams touchdown. So it's showing how versatile and how they were utilized. Because I know you'd be like, well, why are we punting to Gale Sears? Or, why are you kicking him the ball? He had that explosive ability, and whether it was really ahead of his time, because how you utilize not only as a running back, as running the football near the end zone, but also scoring touchdowns in the passing game. And that's what you have in Alvin Kamara.
Patrick Robinson on his second go-around with the Saints. What has Sean Payton seen from P. Rob.
Well, Christian, you look at two Florida State products, and I think they're both going to have success in the NFL. I'm still a P.J. Williams fan. I think he will have success. But initially, when everyone was disappointed, Patrick Robinson out of Florida State, now he's in his ninth year because he was the number one draft in the first round.
In 2010, the year after they won the Super Bowl.
Yes. 32. So now you look at P.J. in 2015, a third-round pick. But still, I think right now they I know P. Ross for sure on the team. And P.J. Williams, I think when the dust all clears, he'll still be in that number.
He's their fourth corner, as I see it right now.
Right. And you look at P. Rob, what he did with the Eagles and where he's at, and he parlayed what he accomplished being a Super Bowl champ to come back to the Saints. And he was moved to the slot primarily in 2017 for the first time in his career. Because, you know, we always had him outside, kind of like Ken Crawley.
Right.
He was always on outside. What he put hay in the barn is when the Eagles put him on the slot receiver, and that's what he did last season in 2017, and that resulted by far into his best season. He allowed just 54% of passes thrown his way to be caught when guarding a slot receiver. That was the second best mark in the NFL in the league. Now, he trailed Chris Harris, who's a stud with the Broncos, who gave up like 0.5% lower. So it's basically 54.5 to 54. So it just goes to show you. Now, Christian, what are you predicting? 3 interceptions?
Yeah, I think if he gets 3.
Well that's what he had with the Eagles. He had 3 interceptions. I was saying I had 3
does
or 4.
Does that include the one he had in the NFC title game?
I don't know, Christian, okay. Because he kind of set the tone against the Vikings. How critical that interception was because the Vikings got off to a fast start and P. Rob picked it and took it to the house. And, boy, then you got a defensive
totally
score.
Totally changed the game.
Yeah, pick six versus the Vikings. I mean, when that happens, it's like, hey, hell yeah, we got the momentum. We're going to win.
Started here in New Orleans in 2010, left after his rookie contract, went to San Diego, the Chargers, and then spent some time with the Colts. Got a good contract from the Colts, but injuries plagued him there. He got cut, and then he ended up 1-year deal with the Philadelphia Eagles and back here with the Saints. So kind of a circuitous route to
well, that's a
New
big
Orleans.
Word, Christian.
I know.
Circuitous.
Circular route.
Okay.
But anyway, back here in New Orleans, I think he's the exact ideal fit for a slot corner.
Well, and you have to have a niche. You know how Sean Payton's always saying, find out what a player can really do, what they can excel at, and then put them in that position. You know, okay, some receivers could put them in the slot, you put them outside, put them wherever, they can be a stud. But some receivers are a better slot receiver. Look how, the Patriots and how they utilize, Julian Edelman, Wes Welker, and all that. How are we seeing it here with Lance Moore?
This is something that Sean Payton has talked about, Bobby, for the better part of 2 or 3 years now, because he did a study. I want to say it was coming off the 2016 season, where in the Super Bowl, I think that year, the teams were in the nickel. I think it was the Patriots and Falcons. I think 60% of the snaps from either side, the Patriots or the Falcons, were from the nickel. They were in a nickel defense. So, and it's been that trend for 2 or 3 years now, going back to several seasons. And that's why I think you're seeing the Saints, along with teams like the Eagles and others across the league, load up on cornerbacks, trying to find those niche players like Patrick Robinson who might not necessarily excel outside but can play the slot really, really well.
Right, and then you look at, a lot of times if you're the top two corners, and let's say you're counting on to play every down, you're playing more snaps and how you get beat up and you're having to tackle run support and all that, well, at times you might have to run support as a slot corner, but what is really your job? To guard the damn slot receiver? Mm-hmm. You know what? It's an in-breaking route, out-breaking, going vertical, whatever. So you have more room that you have to cover versus as an outside cornerback, you can utilize the sideline and help you in coverage. So, listen, P. Rob, all he has to do is just do in a Saints uniform what he did in an Eagles uniform.
And then
he's definitely where he needs to be and doing his job.
People will be screaming. They used to be screaming, P-Rob. They would be screaming, P-Rob.
Yeah. High-fiving them.
Bobby Hebert, Christian Garrick, Sports Talk here on WWLAMFM.com. circuitous is a word. Got a text here at 870-870 asking me if it was, and I confirmed it with Les East of the Advocate. I mean, excuse me, of the AP.
He's an intellect, so he knows.
Yeah, and he's a wordsmith. He writes for a living. But it is a word, and then the texture says, spell it. I can't spell it. I can say it, though.
You can say
but
it.
But I cannot. No, I can say it, but well, I can't spell.
Well, that word they don't use down the bayou. They'd be like.
What'd they look at me like if I said that down there?
They go, what the hell you just said? They like, what?
Well, I would be doing the same thing based on some of the words that they would say. I'd be like, what?
Was that boat? French word or
boat?
Something. Yeah.
Are we talking about a boat or bat or bath? Like boat?
Both of them. Or yeah, I'm actually doing some commercial. Let me see the words. Sometimes I struggle with. Let me see right here. You never say if you're really talking fast. You're like you'd say you're thinking instead of thinking. You know, you don't pronounce the th. That's the thing. You don't pronounce the th no matter where it is.
Tell that story about Bo one time, real quick.
Oh, and this is another one too. No, you ask a question.
Yes.
You don't ask.
It's one of my pet peeves, actually.
No. You probably heard me say that.
I have. And with you, I cut you some slack because it's you.
So what?
But I hate to ask me. I got to ask you a question.
Well, the zinc's clogged, you know.
Or the turlet?
Yeah.
Or the Earl? I don't know. Your story about your son, Bo. Go get your bat.
I think we're going to the break.
We are, yeah. But he showed up with his baseball bat.
Yeah, he's now coaching at UNO basketball.
Good mentor
there. Yeah, I told him, Bo, go get your bat. He went and get his baseball bat. I wanted to get cleaned up.